La antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a una atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group, Gay.
Here comes the June 1st, 2023 edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, but this being a Thursday, we're getting a flashback because I'm trying not to overstress the poor broadcaster or netcaster. That's me. So what we're going to do is we're going to hop back to December 22nd or 23rd, and it looks like the 23rd, of 1999, which was part of the, well, there had been a year of the so-called Three Caballeros, the so-called progressive city council members, Keith Sugar, who was mayor through that year, Tim Fitzmaurice, who became mayor the next year. Actually, I think I'm wrong about that. It was Catherine Byers who was mayor in 1999, Keith Sugar in 2000, and Tim Fitzmaurice in 2001, followed by Chris Crone. They had come, some of them, actually all of them in some way, had promised to fundamentally change the criminalization of the homeless around such basic issues as sleeping. And because Catherine Byers decided that she couldn't persuade her West Side neighbors about the whole thing, that at least was my analysis, she took the majority the other way. The city council has seven people. Anyway, this particular flashback has interviews with a variety of folks, particularly of interest to me, although perhaps not to everyone, is Robert Steffen, who is a fellow who sat in a bag on Pacific Avenue in front of Bunny Shoes on a bench. He was running for president. At least that's what his sign said. And it was all about very specific national issues. But he was also protesting criminalization of the homeless in Santa Cruz and asserting the right of people to be different. He later affirmed this right. It was known as the pink guy or the pink lady or the pink umbrella guy who walked very, very slowly up and down Pacific Avenue, annoying many, amusing some, and I don't know, causing admiration by some, you know, hard to say. So anyway, there's a lot of interesting interviews on here. I have not got the time because of a deadline to go into the details, but I will be posting the details within a day, at least more details than you're getting here. But, of course, why wait for the details when you can actually hear the show? A word of warning, the show is somewhat distorted. I'm not sure if that actually happened when the show was made. I don't think so. It was done on the attempt to archive it. It was somewhat fumbled, but it's still audible. I hope you find something from it. There should be a fuller show on Sunday coming up, which talks about, well, has interviews from the latest attacks by the city on homeless folks living along Highway 9, as well as the update on the oversized vehicle ordinances, a ratification by the Coastal Commission, and the final coffin nails coming next week when they have another hearing. So you're going to be hearing about that, but meantime you must content yourself with guess what you're getting today, which is a flashback to December 23rd, 1999.
Civil rights in Santa Cruz. Bathrop Spears Broadsides coming through December 23rd, 1989. One of our last shows of the year, and could be one of the better ones. We're looking for Bubble Lady KC to join us as co-host if she can find the studio. We'll keep your fingers on the right dial here, and give a call to 437-3772 for Santa Cruz, 96.2. That's 437-3772. Tune in and call in. Roy Kahn, Roger Ron, Captain Kim, Boom, Balls, Rock, Around the Clock. Einstein, James Dean,
about 15 to 8 we're talking to?
Mary.
And Mary, you say you went to the mayor, Mayor Keith Sugar, to talk to him about the fact that when you went to look for a room in a house, you found there were 10 people there looking for the same room?
Apartment, one-bedroom apartment. Uh-huh. And there was no bathtub. I have to have a bathtub in my condition. You know what he told me at first? He said, join the homeless, something like that.
That's what Keith Sugar said.
Yeah.
How did you happen to, did you make an appointment? Did you walk up to him? How did that work?
I made an appointment.
And you talked to him today? Today, of course, it's
no,
December 7th.
Last week.
And
then he told me about this guy, I don't know. I went to see this, talked to him over the phone.
Did he help you get your house? Or?
No, he shifted me on to, some woman called me today, and she said, I'll send you a list. It's probably the same list that I got already, you know.
Oh.
And the list I have, they're not renting.
So, wow.
They're not renting yet. They're all closed, you know.
Really?
The list is all closed. And, I don't know. And then the housing authority sent me this year paper to fill out saying, this is an update, you know, for an apartment to see if you're getting, you know, we do that every so often. So, okay, I filled it out and I didn't hear from him yet.
How old are you?
74.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
20 years.
And how often has it happened that you need to move from one place to another?
Well, the first place I lived 14 years, and then I moved over here, and it was very cold in the winter. My PG&E bill was pretty high, you know. And you know where the heat was going, upstairs.
So you're now having to move because the landlord is, what, raising the rent, or what's the situation?
No, because he wants to rent it to two people. He can get more money.
He was renting it to one, now he wants to rent it to two.
Yeah, he can get more money, but...
Hey, listen, you got to show some sympathy for these landlords, man. I mean, aren't landlords the backbone of our economy?
Yeah, but anyway,
he
doesn't like you to complain about anything.
You mean Mayor Sugar?
No, the landlord.
Well, did Mayor Sugar, what was his ultimate response? Did he say he was going to work for rent control, or did he say he was going to work on anything for help renters? What did he tell you?
No, he just says, what do you want me to do? And I said, well, I tried everything, you know. I don't know what to do.
How long did you talk to him for?
About 5 minutes.
So he gave you 5 minutes, a pat on the shoulder, and then showed you out?
Well,
or am I putting words in your mouth? Sorry, I don't mean to do that.
I'll see what I can know. You said call me Thursday.
You said to call you Thursday?
Yeah, we
said
on a Monday, but I went in, and he says call me on Thursday.
And you called him on Thursday?
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, no, I called, and I had the wrong number. It was the wrong number, so I went in, and told the woman he was swamped with work, so he told her to give me this number to call.
And that's the way it is at the mayor's office. Hopefully Mary got some good information from Mayor Sugar, or Sugar Cheeks, as we'll be calling him, in this cold weather. In the studio with us is another cheeky person, that woman about bubbles, KC. Hey, Karen.
KC, the bubble lady.
Bubble lady. And speaking to the mic so they can hear you, for heaven's sake.
Hi, Robert. How you doing?
And you're going to be co-hosting with us tonight? Is that the story?
I'm here.
You're going to be doing
I'm
a lump of
flesh.
I'd like to point out everybody's, well, we'll get into the flesh thing a little bit later, but or possibly a little bit sooner. Who knows?
Well, I have to squeal. That's so embarrassing.
That can happen. If you're in the same studio with me, you never know what's next here.
I think we should sing maybe some holiday tunes.
I brought some Christmas carols along, such as the old favorite, Away on Vacation, No Time for the Poor, the old song about Mayor Byers, updated to deal with Keith Sugar's new persona as mayor of Santa Cruz. In case anybody has any ideas or wants to join in the chorus when we start doing some singing, I got to pull these lyrics out of my bag. You can give a call to 427-3772. That's the calling number for free radio here at 96.3 FM. And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside, as mentioned before, and I am Bathrobes Pierre, Robert Morris, and hey, you got an hour and three quarters of me coming your way, so sit back and take it like a woman, or if you can't take it like a woman, call in and kick my ass, or at least get in touch and tell me what your thoughts are. Any comments, co-host, on any thoughts?
I'd like to say hi to Steve Argue. Hello, Mr. Steve Argue.
That's that jailbird in the county jail who was caught. Well, he, you want to describe what his crime was?
Oh, you pretty much know what it is, don't you? He was stepping in to assist a lady with her child who was being brutalized by a police officer.
Officer David LeFevre, we might
know. Yeah, and I thought it was ridiculous to try somebody basically for, basically a deed that any good citizen would do. I personally didn't see why Officer LeFevre himself wasn't up there being tried for brutalizing someone in the first place.
That's
the system as we know it and don't love it. So, anyway, happy holidays. That note.
Or clank, bang, 9 months in jail, depending on how you stand.
Did he get any more time?
He got 6 months, and they got an extension, I believe, of 2 months for declining to do what he can call slave labor at the jail. So he's in there for 8 months until, I guess, next June.
No, I hope he's still resisting. It's ridiculous to be jailed for something that was basically an act done in good conscience and then be told you have to work. It's
or at least
to
spend 9 months in jail for one blow to the nose of a police officer. I think the police department regarded it as a political matter, and I suspect it might have been viewed in that light by Judge Robert Artichoke Hart Attic, as I call him. He got his name, as you may remember, from his... Where'd he give it? It was a two-month jail sentence, or was it a 45-day jail sentence for Sandra Loringer for serving free food in Santa Cruz in 1989. A lot of us got arrested for it. Only Sandra Loringer and Brian Flanagan Staley got convicted in trials. The mayor, then Mayor Marty Wernhout, who directed that whole seize the soup operation over many months and never apologized, by the way. Still hasn't apologized to this day.
Thou shalt not be charitable. Wouldn't Scrooge love that sort of behavior?
Hey, it's a Santa Cruz Scrooge Christmas for a lot of homeless people out there. I think, interestingly enough, I was kind of surfing the internet, as they like to say, and I came up with a couple of interesting stories from the heartland, from Wichita, Kansas. A local pastor plans to ask city council members to end a permit requirement for feeding homeless people in Knopfzeger Park. Maybe I should read this. For more than 4 years, the Reverend Shedra Moore, members of her church, have been feeding homeless people on Sundays in Knopfzeger Park. Then a few weeks ago, the city threw up a roadblock and began requiring churches to pay for a $25 an hour permit to feed people in the park. Moore wants to know where Wichita City Council members stand on the issue, and she's going to ask them at Tuesday's council meeting. Why would the city charge churches to take care of the city's own homeless people, she said. Mayor Bob Knight says he's sympathetic to Moore's point of view. I'm not at all interested in being an adversary to the most vulnerable people in our community, he said.
Actions speak louder than words.
He wants to keep Knopfzeger Park, downtown of Douglas and St. Francis, clean.
Of what?
Clean.
Ah.
Clean and open for everyone's use. Well, let's just say for the right sort of people.
Right, yes.
We're editorializing here. Let me continue the story. Mayor Bob Knight of Wichita, Kansas, wants to keep the Knopfzeger Park clean and open for everyone's use. Old Town merchants and police want the homeless to stay out of the Half Acre Park. So it's almost everyone's use. Let's put it this way, everyone that matters. I mean, these homeless people are really, you know, they're nameless. They're just sort of the homeless. You know, I mean, hey, certainly they could find other places to roost. Maybe they can move south for the summer.
Why don't they start making, like, special T-shirts for the homeless, like with a big scarlet H on the front or something?
It would help distinguish. I mean, some of these homeless are pretty
cagey. For your entire life.
You know, they hide. You know, you don't even know they're homeless till later. They conceal from their employers that they're homeless. I find that really kind of sinister. You know, they...
How shifty.
You know, it is pretty shifty, and I know that Santa Cruz considered a requirement that the... Actually, there is currently a law in Santa Cruz that if you falsely advertise what you're going to be spending money for on a placard, well, that's a form of misdemeanor. Actually, it's an infraction the first time you do it, and it's a misdemeanor up to 6 months in jail the second time. So I think it might be time for us to start investigating the claims of these so-called homeless people who hang out downtown looking for quarters. I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, who's really checking up on this? Are our police checking for, you know, major sex offenders, criminals, and ne'er-do-wells? I don't know. What do you think?
I think Scrooge would love this sort of, idea.
Mayor Scrooge.
Actions speak louder than words, as I said before, and we can just, you know, get rid of that surplus population.
Bob Knight.
That's
a model for Mayor Sugar in the days ahead. Said that he wants to keep this park that they're trying to keep the homeless out of clean and open to everybody's use. Old Town merchants and police want the homeless to stay out of the Half Acre Park. Some of the homeless and poor people who once gathered there engaged in prostitution and drug dealing, unlike, I'm sure, everyone in the houses who probably have quite a clean record. We know those homeless people are naturally drug dealing prostitutes.
Yeah, people who live in houses never have sex and never do drugs.
Hardly ever, that's for sure. Interfaith Ministries plan to join with other groups to serve a meal to the homeless Sunday in Knotsiger Park, said Sam Moiskins, executive director of Interfaith Ministries. They do not plan to buy a permit. There's some criminals coming down the road here. We're simply going to feed them on Sunday to give our statement that we think they have as much right to be there as anyone else, he said. The guy's obviously a demented, felonious individual. Muskins wants the city to help find a solution rather than chasing the homeless from one location to another. Moore's goal is to get the council to reverse the Wichita Board of Park and Rec's decision to have the police start enforcing the permit law. Wichita police have asked the park board for stronger permit enforcement. Officers say the feedings generate trash and enable alcoholics and drug abusers to buy liquor and drugs with money they would have spent on food. This is a brilliant plan. The depth of this vision really, it strikes me, it astonishes me. But Moore, pastor of the Word of the Lord International Church, and so the churches do not leave behind trash. As for homeless people with drug and alcohol problems, the churches may be providing the only food they get. Well, obviously the answer to that is, to get rid of the problem, you starve the source. I mean, mitts make lice, let's face it.
Yeah.
Right, Casey?
Right.
I think that's pretty clear.
Read on. Is there more?
Not finished yet.
Wow.
For homeless people with drug and alcohol problems, the church is providing them food they get. Her congregation of about 75 people must come up with $100 a month or more if there are 5 Sundays in a month just to pay the permit fee.
Just say no to paying the fee. Hmm. Just say no.
You are yourself, of course, a known lawbreaker, Casey, bubbling away.
Breaking the law.
This is the woman I want to point out to all you out there. You can't see her here, but she is a real bubblehead. This is a woman.
I'm levitating even.
She's bubblicious. And what she's been doing is really kind of shocking. She, as you may have read in the papers a year or two ago,
terrifying.
She was caught with a bubble-making machine in her hands, interfering with traffic and disturbing passerbys by putting out these kind of soapy bubbles on the avenue.
It was a bubble wand. You know, maybe the officer thought I was going to, like, mesmerize the traffic with this wand. You know, but somehow put, like,
spreading.
A spell on them or something, and they were going to go help or skeleton and run into, like, sidewalks and things. I don't know.
Something. I don't know what they were. Let me finish this article. I'm almost done here. She needs to come up with $100 a month to feed 75 people in the 5 Sundays to pay the permit fee. She does not want the city to take over feeding the homeless. She said, I just would want the city to stop hindering us from doing our work, Moore said. Knight said he would like to work with Moore, that's the mayor, would like to work with the pastor to find a different way to help the homeless, perhaps to help the homeless out of town.
Yeah,
what am I
help
saying?
The homeless out of life or something.
Yeah, right. Help, different way to help the homeless, perhaps by finding a new location to serve the food, possibly Texas or Vancouver or British Columbia. Excellent spot.
You know, I was listening to your last show, and that lady who, was working very hard to keep her job, and she couldn't reveal that she was homeless to her boss, and once she did, the boss was very adamant that before he was retiring that he was going to help her out of her job, since it was such a struggle for her to stay in it.
So, like I was talking about, a
couple of days ago about the homeless people who passed away, the thing on Tuesday.
There was a memorial on Tuesday.
The Memorial
Services Center, which actually the names of over 60 homeless people were read aloud who have died since 1997.
So instead of like an examination of why it might be difficult and unpleasant to stay in a certain area, they want to continue making it unpleasant for certain people, the homeless.
Exactly.
And let's not even call them people. And then just help them out of town, where they'll be helped out of that town and out of that town.
You can't make homelessness attractive, or everybody would want to do it. It's such a kind of a pleasant condition. This really has been emphasized again and again.
It's a party.
It's clear.
Yeehaw.
Continuing and finally ending this story. You interrupted. You're making a pungent commentary. By the way, that all you out there listening might want to dial in and give us your thoughts. I mean, we've got to find some way to stop these homeless people from eating. I mean, the more they eat, the more likely they are to reproduce, more drug problems, more alcohol problems, more bumping into them on the sidewalk, more embarrassment problems. Bunny shoes might find more people sitting on the bench in front of their shoe store in downtown Pacific Avenue. That would be uncomfortable for them. It's a real problem. So perhaps Mayor Knight is taking a kind of an enlightened stand by pressing for $100 to feed these folks. I mean, you got to tax those who engage in this kind of conduct, or where is it going to lead? Anyway, continuing with this, I would just want the city to stop hindering us from doing our work. Moore said Knight said he would like to work with Moore to find a different way to help homeless people, perhaps by finding a new location to serve the food. He said he wants to keep the park clean, but does not want to send a message that helping homeless people is less important. If there's a social need in terms of tending to the needs of the homeless, maybe we can find another way to do it. The council meeting begins at 9 a.m. Tuesday. That was last Tuesday at City Hall. Now, I have an interesting follow-up story, which I also picked off the internet. Maybe we can interrupt that one as well. It seems amusing.
I'll do my best.
This is, again, from the Wichita Eagle, which is, a Wichita paper. Where would they be without us? Faith groups gathered Sunday, this is a December 20th story, in downtown's Knopfzegger Park to feed the homeless and protest park permits, by Jennifer Cones Roy, the Wichita Eagle. Some of Wichita's homeless showed up for a free dinner Sunday in Knopfzegger Park, but the police never arrived. Interfaith Ministries had hoped for a police action to draw attention to its refusal to buy the $25 an hour permit it calls punitive to those who serve the poor. Interfaith, a coalition of several Wichita churches and religious groups, served a dinner of turkey and roast beef to about 30 people gathered in the park. Although the city's Board of Parks and Recreation began requiring the permit in November, no police officers tried to run Interfaith members off from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. while food was being served. If they do, said Interfaith Ministries' Fran Wilson, it would be a large statement. I don't think it would be to the city's advantage. Enforcement of downtown park permits and of vagrancy, jaywalking, and loitering laws were stepped up with the city's start of renovation of the Eaton Hotel, a local landmark directly west across St. Francis Street from Knopfzegger Park. Interfaith used Sunday's dinner to issue a public statement calling upon city leaders to address discrimination issues against poor people and to seek solutions to homelessness with input from city's religious groups. We trust our city leaders to locate a safe place for poor people to congregate and enjoy the simple amenities of food, shelter, and decent sanitation, the organization said in a statement they distributed at the park. However, until this facility is found, we will continue to serve those in need wherever they may be. We will not pay a punitive fee that discriminates against the very people who seek to serve. Sam Muskins, Interfaith Ministries Executive Director, said that in the past 6 months, officials have gone out of their way to ignore the input of low-income citizens and faith ministries regarding housing and other critical issues. They have left low-income and homeless issues to religious communities, but they don't bring us into the dialogue, Muskin said. Where would they be without us? Gosh, doesn't this sound a little familiar? I mean,
something like money taking precedence over people again. You know, really, they should couch the church here, the ministry should couch their argument in terms of they're exercising their faith. I mean, there's a biblical tenet that how can you love God if you cannot show love to the brother that you see sitting right next to you and is right in front of you? So, in essence, by giving them this, making them pay this punitive fee, they're actually standing in the way of these people exercising their faith, their conscience. And if they argue it from that point, they should say, let us separate church and state and let us practice our faith by feeding these people who are God's creatures.
Indeed. Indeed, they're probably saying that, you know, in some of their other statements, certainly a matter of freedom of religion and common sense and also basic civil right for a citizen, whatever her or his religious
inclination,
to be able to feed someone in a public place. Of course, Food Not Bombs facing this whole issue up in San Francisco. Police stopped arresting them in November because Willie Brown perhaps was worried about the publicity. But now that he has won election again as mayor up there, he may resume the harassment, as has been the case in Los Angeles. There's a story I'm going to read, hopefully, if I can find the text. I prepared it for last show, but I haven't got it ready yet for this show, where Los Angeles Food Not Bombs is now being arrested in Pershing Park, again, for feeding the homeless in public spaces. This is kind of a deal that comes up when redevelopment happens. So, for instance, we noticed in Wichita, they were apparently redoing the Eaton Hotel, presumably in an upscale way. This happened in San Jose when they started to redevelop the downtown in Salinas, when they started to redevelop the Salinas area. And, of course, in San Francisco at Civic Center, when they began to redevelop the San Francisco downtown area. Although perhaps that followed and was part of their Matrix Drive Away the Homeless program. Also, I'm not quite finished with this story yet. In Santa Cruz, of course, the Homeless Issues Task Force, the $10,000 commission funded by the city last March, finally set up in August, I guess it was, August or September. They got had their first meetings, and they got their full component of people in October. They're pretty slow, in other words, the city bureaucrats in getting this together. They issued recommendations immediately suggesting that the violence against homeless people, lack of shelter, only 20% of the homeless have any option for shelter in Santa Cruz, and the fact that six have died in the last 3 months led them to urge Mayor Keith Sugar to put on the agenda for the last council meeting of the year, which was last Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday actually, a measure saying we will suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances until such time as there are safe zones set up. And, you know, the Homeless Issues Task Force knew that they didn't have a majority in the city council, but they also knew that Keith Sugar was the man who had the courage to present that proposal a year ago, even when Catherine Byers, or we call her Sleeping Band Byers, then the mayor and still really the shadow mayor, she has the power of the majority, kind of Fitzmaurice tends to run with her, it looks like, and at least it has a number of votes for the last year. We all hoped, I guess the Homeless Issues Task Force particularly, because they unanimously passed this, they urged him to just put this on the agenda, even if it was an emergency item, even if it got defeated. Sugar wouldn't even make the attempt. Sugar said, no, I haven't got the votes. In essence, it said, I won't put it on the agenda until I have the votes. And since Byers has said she will never vote for it, or she won't vote for it, And he isn't going to vote for it in the foreseeable future. And yet, of course, our basic civil rights for the homeless, the idea that you don't arrest someone for sleeping unless you have a legal place for them to go. Mm-hmm. And we're not saying people should be able to sleep anywhere and everywhere, as Rotkin in the past has smeared our position, but apparently has taken to being more accurate in his criticism.
What would be thought of as an undesirable place to sleep?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily, as a concession to the merchants, if the merchants would support, and we have been urging them to support, legal places in industrial zones like Harvey West Park and Mission Street Extension and putting porta-potties out there, open up a couple of the parks at night, or a parking structure which has already toilet facilities, exteriors.
Mysterious arm is moving.
Yeah, we're looking at some stuff in the studio.
Levitating things in the studio,
indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen.
But, if there would open up one of those places already exists, wouldn't cost a lot of money, then we could say, then the rest of the city, no, you shouldn't sleep in the rest of the city because there are legal places to sleep. But, you know, this not only won't the city do this, but not only won't the city council pass it, but Mayor Sugar, the most liberal person on the city council, won't even put it on the agenda, won't even attempt to have the matter brought up, and as Nessence said, he won't bring it up at all until November.
So why do you bother going to people depending on them to take some sort of action when, frankly, it is bullshit and nonsense, and anybody with half a brain could figure it out? Why not just sleep if you need to sleep? Open up your yard to somebody who needs a place to go or to take a shower. Why do we, you know, pander, you know, to the powers that be, who basically want to hold you in a state of dependency on them, and they want you to conform to a certain image of what a citizen is and a good consumer and so forth and so on? Why do we continue kvetching about they're not doing this and not doing that? They're not about to do this or that.
Well,
why don't we just circumvent all of that, quit being dependent on them to take some sort of action that, frankly, they're not going to take?
I catch your drift, Casey. I think people should, of course, engage in these private charitable efforts, and I also think people do.
That's
what people do outside. Right. Every night there are, you know, 500 to 1,500 homeless people sleeping in spite of Mayor Keith Sugar's failure to put these items on the agenda, in spite of Shadow Mayor Byers' refusal to take the kind of action we expected from her based upon what she has said in past years, and in spite of the fact that the police run around and harass a proportion of the homeless population at night in a way that makes everybody unsafe, because if you don't know when you're going to be harassed, then you hide more deeply. And you hide more in less safe places. Let's put it this way: you don't hide in a group, in a large visible group, because then you would, draw the police down on you, perhaps. And the problem there is, we've had reports of 30 to 50 beatings this year, some of which have sent people to the hospital. Only one of which has resulted in any conviction. That's the beating of Joe Barker. So it's a bad situation, and it's one which, of course, is being ignored. And the reason we talk about city council, the reason I talk about it, I know, is because it's a point of pressure, and it's not that we are relying on city council to do anything. No, we are pointing out the fact that the established political folks who should be dealing with these problems are routinely denying human rights to their poorest citizens, and that the community should be informed that this is happening. And so every individual should take whatever steps he or she thinks is appropriate to redress the situation. I have to agree with that.
You know, I really think that the people of Santa Cruz really do understand, you know, the housing situation, how hard it is for just regular folks who don't have a good paying job to have a place to go sometimes, and sometimes have transitional periods. And, you know, that's why we have the term couch surfing, you know, because it's a reality.
Anyway, the story from Wichita, Kansas concludes.
Oh, you're not done yet?
Not yet.
Oh, don't let me interrupt.
That's okay. They have left the low-income and homeless issues to religious communities, but they don't bring us into the dialogue, Mustin said. Where would they be without us? Pastor Shedra Moore and members of her congregation from Word of the Lord International Church were also in the park collecting warm clothing and money to help the poorest of the city's poor. They did purchase the permit, but weren't happy about it. Moore said members of her congregation began weekend feeding and ministering to the downtown homeless more than 4 years ago. They contacted the Parks Department and were told that no permits would be required. They were told food handlers' cards may be required to serve large numbers of people at a time. They contacted the health department, took the required classes, and got their food handlers' cards.
Oh, my God.
Then we started the feedings here with the blessings of the city leaders, Moore said. Now almost 5 years later, they're charging us. We did what they told us to do. The city should keep their word to us. Here's an interjection, and I'm still not finished with this article. Keith McHenry of Food Now Bombs in San Francisco encountered exactly the same mentality, and probably for exactly the same reason. He was not bothered by the city police for feeding people, which he was doing three times weekly in 1988, until he applied for permits. He applied for permits because certain legalistic members of his collective, the Food Not Bombs collective, wanted to follow the law, even though he advised against it, because he said you'll simply draw down the heat of the city. They know we're feeding. They can take action if they want. The minute he applied for a permit, mass arrests began of Food Not Bombs in Golden Gate Park. And then eventually they granted them a permit, and then eventually a year later they withdrew the entire permit process in order to criminalize Food Now Bombs. Food Now Bombs has been under a permanent injunction in San Francisco ever since. Ironically, even though I am an atheist myself and a pretty aggressive one, I believe that the belief in a deity is a delusion. That's my personal belief, and I know a lot of the great majority of the country disagrees with me on that, as is their right. Nonetheless, I spent the longest time in jail in my life serving people food. And I served people food repeatedly, but I was arrested for one instance of rice and beans back in 1993 in the fall, and I served, 27 days in jail for it. And again, the motivation here, I think, is the same motivation as pushes the city authorities to go after religious groups, is they are being pressed by downtown merchants and commercial interests to restrict basic human rights, even though that means clear violations of the First Amendment, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, all part of the First Amendment, because money talks. Really, it really does.
Money and forces.
And but it is also true that the voice of the people, when they get their asses together and get out on the streets and do something real,
right,
like they did in Seattle, like they did in San Francisco, by putting Emiliano in the runoff with Brown, although they couldn't beat the money in the end, Brown won. I think real things can happen, and historically that's where our faith is, at least that's where my faith is. Let me finish this article, and then I'll take that tape off your mouth there. It goes like this. We were told food handlers' cards may be required to serve large numbers of people at a time. They contacted the health department, took the required classes in Wichita, Kansas, and got their food handlers' cards. Then we started feeding through with the blessings of the city leaders, Moore said. 5 years later, they're charging us. We did what they told us to do. The city should have kept their word to us. The redevelopment of Old Town and the city's core is creating a world of two separate realities for Wichita's haves and have-nots, said Reverend Jeanette James, who once had a ministry for the homeless close to the park. People who come to Old Town to eat a sumptuous meal don't have to look at the people in the same area who can't eat or find shelter, she said. We need to think about how to treat our homeless and poor. There are issues people need to face. One downtown resident, who until recently was homeless, said police harassment of the homeless and low-income people in the Old Town area is highly discriminatory. When I'm jaywalking behind 15-year-old kids with an open container and the police turn around and stop only me, it's very selective to single us out, he said. It's not cheap either. It's a $48 ticket. Santa Cruz, I think it's more like a $162 ticket, although it could be as little as $50, I think. The poor have always been in the downtown area, said Dennis and Patsy Shirley, who offered a money donation to Moore's group Sunday. It's crazy. Other cities try to help their homeless, Dennis Shirley said. Even when we were little kids, this area was known for helping the homeless. Patsy Shirley agreed. We're not happy with the city charging a permit to feed these guys, she said. We're all in this thing together. That's from the Wichita Eagle on December 20th.
We're talking with Ernie Chessmaster in jailbird. What are you doing going to jail, Ernie?
Well, I was walking down the street Monday evening,
right,
and two officers were walking in the opposite direction. And as we passed, one of the officers identified me as someone he'd given a sleeping ticket to, a camping ticket to, for a camping infraction.
So he immediately consulted his memory and his computer.
Or somebody's computer. Anyway, he detained me while he called in to find out if I'd paid for the same. And on finding that I didn't, decided to further harass me in any way he possibly could, and did. And one of the things he asked me about was my name. He refused to believe that my name was Ernie, even though I produced a letter to my mother with my name on it. And
what's the name of this interesting officer?
I'll look it up. I got the papers on him.
Okay.
He's a great case of somebody with a good memory, but no brain to do anything with such memory.
Or possibly his heart is too small for his brain.
He also possesses a fairly vicious sense of humor, you know. Like he playfully threatened to keep my money in my possession since I didn't have my name on the bills and stuff, you know.
And when did this happen?
Monday.
What time?
Monday evening, about 4:30.
And where did it happen?
Walking by I'm drawing a blank on the name. It'll come to me in one.
About a block from here?
Yeah, it was in front of the coffee establishment over there.
Coffee roasting?
Oh, yeah.
Starbucks?
Starbucks. Yeah, I just couldn't think of Starbucks.
So he ended up taking you to jail? Or writing you out a warrant?
Yeah, he ended up taking me to jail, and I've been there for the last 4 days.
4 days? I mean, you didn't get a warrant or had a bail on you?
Well, you know, it was very strange. Monday night while I was there, you know, I had to spend endless hours in a holding tank freezing. When I finally called me, you know, the officer on deck, whoever, said he was going to just give me court dates and release me right away. And he says, you'll get your stuff in about an hour, so just wait in the holding room there. 2 hours went by, 3 hours, and then finally he comes back and goes, gee, we didn't get a number for your ID card, so we don't really know who you are. And I said, you don't know who I am? You have my fingerprint, you have my picture, you know, your ID system here is an absolute killer to the DMV, and you're worried about a DMV number? But obviously that wasn't the real reason why they detained me. They may have decided that this would be the last they ever saw of me if they didn't keep me there. So I guess they decided to keep me there and get what they could out of me rather than nothing.
So were you just held without bail then?
No, I had bail, but it was like, you know, I pictured that I was only going to be there a very short time, so there was no point in posting bail.
What was the bail?
It was a few hundred dollars. I think it became $272. It might have been, but that was after I fled to one charge. It might have been more than that. I think maybe around $300-something.
What did you appear before?
I appeared before two judges. I appeared before Danner, and I appeared before, what's the guy that begins with an A?
Attic.
Attic, yeah.
And why before two?
Well, there were two, you know, two different, like, little Mickey Mouse things that they had on me. An interesting thing happened, though. Yesterday...
Hang on a second.
Yeah. I was saying that I want to sit down and finish the interview sitting down.
Sure.
That's all.
No, go ahead.
My legs are killing me.
All right.
I charge extra for standing up.
I can't stand you. I mean, I don't know. You can't stand for me. I can see that.
Okay, well, the interesting thing that happened occurred yesterday. I went before Judge Attic. And,
first judge you went before?
No, I had gone before Danner and pled on some other matter the day before. And
you didn't put them all in one court?
No.
That's very strange.
Well, it turned out well for me, I guess. I'm not sure. Anyway, it turned out well for me for whatever reason. Because it wasn't going to turn out well for me as it was going with Attic, because you know, I had a camping ticket and a failure to appear for the camping ticket.
Yeah, that's half the camping tickets out of failures to appear.
Yeah, but he wanted 9 days out of me for that, days in jail, and I said, is there an option to pay a fine or to do community service? No, he just wanted jail out of me.
Did he say why?
He said because of my failure to appear.
Did you ask for a jury trial on a failure to appear?
Well, no.
You have a right to.
I know. What I did is, like, I went through about five times of having him give me time to think and go on to other matters. And as I thought about it, I thought of my options, and I thought of questions to be asking. So when he'd come back to me, I'd start asking him questions, you know. So I asked him what my bail would be if I pled not guilty. I asked him what the breakdown was on the fine on which he was basing my... And I asked him...
What did he tell you on that? What was the fine, the breakdown?
He didn't give me a thorough breakdown, really. He just
tell you what
threw...
the breakdown itself was a cost of?
No, he didn't.
He said that it was 54 or 162.
He didn't say. He just threw a couple of numbers at and then gave me the total. It was real arrogant, you know. I asked him for a breakdown on it, and he just says, well, there's this and there's that, and the total is this, you know. But he didn't give me all the things that made that total. All right, so the last time he came to me to ask me how I was going to plead, I said, well, if I don't plead now, when's the next time I can plead? And he said, in 20 minutes. And I said, no, I mean, if I don't plead today, when would be another day when I could plead? And he says, well, when do you want to plead? And I said, tomorrow. He says, okay, 8:30. So that was yesterday, so tomorrow being today, I showed up. They brought me to court at 8:30, basically, but it wasn't Attic who I was appearing before.
Danner.
It was Danner, which turned out to be my great fortune, because Danner dropped the charges on me and let me go.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I had already noticed that there was a...
You gave you time, certainly. That was served 4 days in jail, right?
Well, two of those days were applied to another matter, the time served.
That was a murder matter back in Denver?
No, it was another rinky-dink thing, but... That was when I first appeared before Danner, the thing I pled to he applied 2 days to, so I had only two more days to apply to anything left. Anyways, he just, it was just Friday, and, you know, he gives you $40 if you want to serve out a fine. Danner's department, which I think is two, I'm not sure, his department gives you $40 per day to serve out a fine, whereas Attic only gives you $30 a day.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. I also had heard that municipal court and superior court have been merged.
Yes, that's true.
So there was kind of like a new shakedown going on there as far as...
Yeah, that was Chess Master Ernie, who we interviewed about a month and a half ago on the streets on Pacific Avenue. And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That sounds like the phone. Let's see who's on the line here.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
It is the phone.
Well, good.
I was listening to them. I wanted to sort of concur. I've been judge watching a little bit in the last few months, and I noticed Danner do the same thing that Ernie described twice. It's like he thought the whole thing of the guys being held was so absurd. Even the one guy had only been in there for a couple hours, he dismissed the whole thing based on time, sir.
Now, these were on sleeping band tickets or something?
One was, and one was... Well, no, they were actually both warrants, but the warrant in one case had come from a sleeping band ticket, and I can't remember what the other one was.
Well, I've had different experiences with Danner. I mean, I thought perhaps he'd be a good judge, but we know that he completely rewrote the...
I'm not saying he's up to you.
He completely rewrote the penal code on the case of Dennis Rehm, which is really an important case where... We've talked about that on the air, you can't get jail a person for an infraction, and Danner now claims you can, which is a very significant judicial rewriting of the law, but hopefully we're going to find another case to appeal that, and he also...
Hopefully. It needs to be appealed. I'm not saying take your proposals to the man.
In another case...
I'm just saying I've seen him act... appropriately to something that seems absurd to even be in court.
Right.
More than once in a short period of time.
Well, that's good. I initially thought Danner was better, but I've kind of changed my mind. But, you know,
I'm trying to say he's better in general.
Mixed information. So it's nice to hear when, you know, there's less harassment of people for sleeping. But, you know, what he needs to do, of course, is find the law and constitutional locally. And that would be the... I mean, it's not just, you know, we're looking for some kind of...
we need to find a way to expose all these judges.
It's not just a miracle kind of thing. It's sort of an obvious thing that your ordinary person on the street realizes. You cannot constitutionally harass a person for sleeping if there are no legal places to do it.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. And, you know, for judges to continue to uphold this fiction that there's some legal justification for this is standing human rights abuse that Danner is colluding with. And I'm afraid I don't have any sympathy for him.
Well, I'm not asking for yours or your listeners' sympathy. I'm saying, oddly, you know, if all else fails, stall till you get in front of Danner if it's an absurd thing. I'm not saying if he has to think on the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about one specific kind of situation. There may be a pattern here where he's, I wouldn't even call it humane, just a little more rational than all the others.
I don't. Well, that's certainly
in this one regard.
It's your opinion on that, and that's fine. I saw him recently. I saw him recently take a county camping case and essentially prosecute the guy, even though the prosecution was failing to do a good job to do that. And he ruled essentially that the roadside arresting exception did not apply to the county, the whole county. So what it means is if you're driving through the county, then you cannot pull over to the side of the road if you're tired, under Danner's interpretation of the law, even though it's explicitly provided for in the county code by Gary Patton. And admittedly, this was in a section that referred to the no camping zones, but any sensible judge, I think, would have extended it to the entire county as really understood to be the case by the sheriff's department. So the Sheriff's Department has one understanding, and Danner, who was DA for 20 years, I would remind our audience, and should know what the practice is in this matter, is saying that it's not legal to pull over to the side of the road unless you happen to be in the 5% area of the county covered by the tiny no camping zones. So the rest of the county, you pull over, you're subject to an $81 ticket, which Danner reduced to $50 in the case of...
So you're saying he got it all backwards?
I'm saying he specifically and intentionally ruled that way as his own form of the social policy, I think, that he wants to mm-hmm. institute, which is bad stuff.
But they all do that, don't they? You know that.
Yep, they sure do.
I wanted to tell you about another thing I've heard about. Maybe you already know. I doubt if it's been on the air yet. But do you know the car lot that both sells and rents by daily at the corner of Laurel Broadway Bridge and Front Street next to the empty theater?
I heard that the city council was giving them a bad shake and...
It sounds like the whole town, you know. It's like, oh, George, oh, the guy with money. You know, so therefore, fuck you, because you're just a little businessman. That's what it sounded like to me.
Mm. I know that Scott Graham talked about it at some length in an interview, but I don't know if we've played that interview.
I talked to the owner, and he really feels shafted, and I stupidly said, well, maybe you should talk to Chris Crone. He considers himself a neighborhood guy, and he seems more responsive than the other people. And Chris gave him, he said, I already did that, and it was terrible. He gave him some kind of, that's not my aesthetics kind of answer, and just, in effect, flipped him off.
Now, my co-host may have a comment on that.
Well, I frankly don't have a comment on that, but what I do have a comment on is the sleeping in your car. At one point, I was carrying some blankets in my car to the laundry.
Criminal blanket carrier.
To launder them. And a policeman pulled me over and threatened to give me a ticket because I was carrying blankets in my car. He thought I was sleeping in my car. Now, I didn't have a comment about the other thing.
Well, that's an interesting... I remember.
Have you ever talked to that officer before at all?
Yeah, I've seen him around town. I know who he is, and he knows who I am.
This is an interesting case. I remember we talked about a year ago, and you gave a great interview on the subject. And I think it's really illustrative of how this law is not, you know, dealing with real health and safety concerns, but simply is a catch-all that police use to interrogate, stop, question, harass people that they choose to use it on. It's not, you know, it doesn't serve a reasonable social purpose, and there are other laws that can deal with any of the real concerns that come up, as was pointed out by our very own mayor a year ago when he made his, I guess, one of his two attempts to do something about the sleeping ban in a sort of a scatter gun, shotgun way without talking to any homeless activists, so it was sort of a doomed to fail effort, after which when Byers hit him on the snout with a newspaper, he went home and like a little puppy under the rug and never came out again. And as you know, we're talking, of course, I know, Linda, you're the head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, you're the chair. You went to Sugar a couple weeks ago and asked, you know, they put on the agenda, you were directed by your task force to ask him to put on the agenda the item that said stop the sleeping and camping ban enforcement until there are safe zones set up, and he just said, no way.
I talked to him about it several times before we went sort of in mass at the City Council Oral Communications. And yeah, you were right when you said something earlier. His position seems to be, I don't have a vote, so there's no point in dealing with it.
When in fact, I think the Homeless Issues Task Force understood that there weren't the votes there necessarily, but that an issue had to be raised publicly somewhere down the line to get the votes, because if you keep the issue in the dark, if you keep it in the doghouse, if you try to hide it until you think everything is ready to go, it never will be ready to go, because the public will not be able to understand that the issue is one that needs to be talked about publicly, that deserves to be talked about publicly. I suppose, you know, it will anyway in a certain sense, but I say when politicians begin to talk about it publicly, then there's a certain sector of the public that feels more comfortable talking about it as well.
When politicians impede the normal progress of a community discourse, in my opinion, they're creating a certain degree or level of fascism.
Fascism.
No matter who they think they are, they're in fact stifling people. And that's what lets a lot of domesticants have these sordid and untrue beliefs about people that don't just happen to have a house. You know, they take the one bad experience and condemn this growing population. As if it, I've had people talk to me to that effect. You know.
Mm.
same thing about welfare, you know. How dare you stick up for people who get food stamps? Why aren't there these couple of cheeks, you know? So let's condemn the other couple thousand of them in town.
It's it's a sort of a know-nothing attitude. I wonder, you're having another meeting of your Homeless Issues Task Force on...
Monday, this coming Monday.
That's, what, 4 days away, 5 days away, December 27th?
2 days after Christmas.
And are you going to be taking some action or asking some action to be taken now that you've been slapped across the chops by sugar and...
Nothing on the agenda thing?
Yeah, in response to nothing on the agenda. Plus, I think sugar said something to the effect that you guys had a sort of a secret meeting that we were able to... crash on the Sunday before the city council meeting, and he said something to the effect of, you bring it up on the oral communications period, and even if we won't put anything on the agenda, we'll discuss it. And I got it, for the life of me, I have not been able to find anything on the tape that Sugar said about the sleeping ban, even after you and others brought it up as he requested.
Well, he said something like, if you people give me some good openers or a nice lead, now I guess maybe we didn't do our job, but there were, what, seven different people coming at it from different angles, not just task force members?
Well, maybe he wanted a soft shoe and a couple of good songs. I mean, you know, maybe that's what will be required to get him to respond.
I don't think that's going to get it. I think he needs to hear from people who live in houses as well as people who don't. The people who hear how much the tickets are and how people get indentured slavery out of it because you don't happen to have a disposable income. If people knew that, they'd start calling the city. And I don't think we should leave it to just sort of the strong ladies at WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I think everybody in the community has a responsibility to know about this.
Well, I encourage people who are...
Can you believe there's like 30 churches in this town just in the city of Santa Cruz?
I do. But I think based on what you're saying, I'll use this as an opportunity to pitch a call for all you listeners out there. Even though those of you who called before, you can pick up your phone tonight and call 420-5020. That's 420, woo-woo, 5020. and tell Mayor Sugar, you know, it's time to get a special session going and discuss this issue. Apparently they're having some session about development on January 4th, but they don't have anything about human rights problems with the homeless, even though, you know, that issue has been unanimously brought to their attention by their own $10,000 Homeless Issues Task Force. So give a call to 420-5020, and I would say, please, let me finish this minute, Linda, and then just ask them to put on the agenda the recommendation that your Homeless Issues Task Force unanimously passed, which is stop harassing people under the sleeping and camping ordinance until you have safe zones, and call a special session to put that on the agenda. 420-5020. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to add that, you know, people can suggest temporary safe zones, either like between now and that agenda.
I'm sorry, say that again?
People calling the city could be suggesting temporary safe zones. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, well, actually, I think...
Because they'd feel safe parking themselves if they had to sleep outside.
I saw a list of 9 of them, which I think, you know, ranging from Harvey West Park, Mission Street Extension, city parking lots, county parks, city parks. You know, I mean, there's plenty of suggestions. It's just these people have the determination they're not going to do anything unless this zone is levitating 100 feet above the city, preferably blacked out by clouds. You know, I mean, it seems pretty cool. You know, possibly, you know, 30 miles off the coast to the west. You know, that would
I don't want to get off and berate the council members.
Certainly
I think you've covered it. They're not going to do anything, and they believe that it's the will of the people to act like there's not a problem. And that's why they give explicit, if not perhaps implicit, but it seems explicit to me, permission to the police department to use a double standard in enforcing the laws that are meant to control the appearance of bombs. You know, that's what our city does, and the police continue to get away with it, like whisking in off the streets with the tape you were playing. I think that's just another example of this, you know, we'll wink and turn the other way. If you think they're poor or you've seen them too often, that's the policy the police presume.
Are you? I know you have an agenda coming up for this Homeless Issues Task Force. Are you going to make any more specific recommendations to the council? Because I think that even when they ignore your recommendations, at least the community knows that you're making these recommendations.
Well, I don't think the community does. That's why your show is important, and I think we need to find other modes, too.
press conference, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of
community meetings, too.
Go ahead.
May I interject a comment,
please? Sure.
Speaking of aggressive, Robert was mentioning earlier that he's an aggressive atheist. Now, I think with regards to this issue, we need... Yeah, down, boy, down. He's an animal. Damn. I think we need to take more aggressive action. I mean, I'm sitting here in the studio, and I'm reading this flag, and I mean, it really applies. And let me read it. I'm not sure if I can. It says, can I move this? Is it going to totally screw up? Hold on. All right. The flag says, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce the people under absolute despotism. Okay. It sounds, we've been talking about absolute despotism since we got on the radio here. It is their right, the people's right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. I think we need to take slightly more aggressive action. We're going to people who are not concerned. They're betraying the security of the people, and we need to...
I want them WTO protesters to get their butts together and start doing the same thing here in Santa Cruz. I think we can see action mighty pronto.
Well, people get together to be anti-corporation, but they need to be pro-people, too. They need to see each other as vulnerable. And then understand how easy it is to become more vulnerable to the point where you can die just because people shun you. I mean, this government, as she's pointing out, isn't going to get there. But, you know, remember about the Heiner House?
The Heiner House, of course, was the former building that was damaged in the earthquake, and they kind of left it around for 2.5-3 years. And they decided they were going to demolish it and set up a parking lot for the police department when the police department was in its old space. A number of us, led by you, Linda LeMaster, you scofflaw, you, a union of the homeless breakaway group called Bag Ladies Revolt, occupied the Heiner House. I know I was part of the Baggy Boys Auxiliary.
That was the night the Baggy Boys Auxiliary
coalesced. And I was a proud Baggy Boy, I'll tell you. And that actually had an ultimate effect. You were taken to, they dragged you around the courts for a couple of months after that in 1992, and you were also running for city council at that time.
Yeah, that sort of took care of any chance of getting elected, but I didn't have the means anyway. You have to have a lot of money, apparently.
But I think it had ultimately had a very positive outcome. You were able to make sure that house was saved instead of, you know,
I'm trying to say, but let me tell you even farther back history. The house was built as a duplex, and it was a beautiful old solid redwood inside and the stairs Victorian. Two families lived there, and it was big enough for the way families used to be with lots of people, multi-generations. And then it had got turned over to Parks and Rec, as the city at that time was turning a lot of residents into offices, like where the personnel department still is to this day, is used to be somebody's home. So that history had come and gone. The earthquake had come and gone. That building was damaged, and Parks and Rec had to hurry out of there, although they left a lot of their goodies and papers behind. The building was condemned by engineers who weren't around to stick up for their work later when we squatted the building. It had been declared technically unsafe to be inside. There was a young couple who had been squatted on the ceiling, on the roof, before we showed up and turned it into kind of a political moment. But the outcome was that first they were going to turn it into SROs. When they got over the idea they could just destroy the building. Then they found a site for it. And then, because of the ordinary dealing with the bureaucrats kind of public pressure and a lot of phone calls in, they decided to go along with the idea of letting it be for families. And then they put programs on it, you know, like you have to be a single parent that wants to go to college. I don't know if that's still in place, but you know how they get it. They think if you don't, know how to be subservient, you probably shouldn't have your own life. I'm being vague with this today here. I'm not referring to the city council, although that is who set the same kind of thing up happening at Page Smith Community House. Anyway, that's just a trend. If we survive it, sometimes we can create autonomy out of it. But the point is that that building was doomed to demolition. And through surprise acts of small groups of people, really. It went through at least three phases of retrieving and reestablishing.
I think it's really important. I think the community can have an impact. I mean, you see that in many different cases, ranging from one individual's stand, as Julia Butterfly was able to produce a limited victory over the Timber Barons up north,
yeah,
to Seattle WTO protesters en masse being able to, I think they prompted Clinton to make changes in his in his labor deals because he got nervous because it was all being publicized, and that provoked third world countries to block WTO processes. Now the WTO is doing business as usual. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
But you know, it had a major energizing effect.
And I think when you look closer to home at the same kind of success stories, you realize what risks individuals are taking. But when they throw themselves together with some kind of support team and intent and keep their intent in mind, things are accomplished, like the expansion and finally the opening of the original River Street shelter, which has since degraded itself into a place for roommates only or something.
Yeah, for people with mental illness designations in the main. Although I think there are 15 or 16 homeless spaces, although it's got to be case managed. So Casey wants to say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, when you're talking about the WTO meetings and going before the council and addressing issues, I mean, even though the WTO is still pretty much doing business as usual, and even though the council really isn't listening, it was a good opportunity to get the word out, education. And I think that's like most of the battle. You know, once the people gain an awareness, it's going to be a lot harder to keep people separated and overpowered.
This is a great conversation. Yeah. Linda, I'm going to ask you to kind of sum it up because I want other people to be able to join us.
I got out with a letter to.
Okay.
And maybe you should announce to the public and especially people that have experienced homelessness, the meeting Monday is at 5:30 at the Civic Center's ABC room on Church Street.
5:30 on Monday, come to hear and speak at the Homeless Issues Task Force, which I'm hoping will expand its oral communications period so people can, from the streets, can really bring forth issues and you guys can respond. I've been pretty critical. I've called you the Homeless Issues Task Farce because I've seen, you know, your $20,000 paid staff member who's, in my mind, an anti-homeless proxy for the mayor chosen in a closed-door process. And I've gone on to that at length. That's Don Lane we're talking about, former mayor. But, I've also seen you guys come up with some great resolutions. And now if you can take it one step further, ratchet it up, and actually start appealing directly and clearly to the community because the council obviously isn't listening, I think you're on your way.
And hopefully we can do that. But imagine the next step after that, which a group of dissimilar people interested in a single problem disconnect from any legislative alliances like belonging to the city council.
Thanks, Linda.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathroom Spear Robert Norris. In the studio with me is Casey, who's been giving us some pungent commentary from her side of the room. Welcome, Carla. The phone lines are open in case you want to comment. I know I got some nasty emails from people who don't like the issues we raise and want to reduce it to personalities. And if you guys are listening, hey, give a call in. We'll talk issues. That's what I want to do. If you think the sleeping ban is a great thing, come in, call in and tell us why. If you don't and you think it's a human rights obscenity, as a lot of us do, call the mayor, 420-5020. And tell him to get off his butt, call a special session, and deal with the issue where you have 20% of the homeless population sheltered, brutal attacks against homeless people, 30 to 50 since the first of the year, 6 homeless people dead in the last 3 months, 5 or 6, I'm not quite sure, getting different figures on that. And 420-502 is the number to call if you want to get the mayor's office any time of the day or night. You can leave a message. And call us, 427-3772.
Chris Larson, it's about 7:30. Chris, you've been a worker in Santa Cruz at the buttery, a writer in town, And you also recently returned from Europe.
Appreciate it.
You were struck by some of the things you saw on your travels?
Yeah, actually, I moved away from Santa Cruz actually because of the intensively high rent. I moved to Reno, and I was really struck by, firstly, by the fact that there were actually people sleeping in parks. And in fact, if there were people sleeping in parks, what the police did was the police would take them and take them to a place where they would get a meal and offer them services and say, we can do something for you. But beyond that, I actually just went to Holland to actually study the social system there. And that was amazing.
Come back soon.
All right.
It was amazing because outside of the train stations, including in England, I was in England and I slept outside of the bus stations. I slept in the airports. I slept outside of train stations. I slept on trains. I slept anywhere. There was a park where people just slept. And you know what? Backpacking was just about as acceptable could be. It's amazing. And in Santa Cruz, you can't even. I see a police patrol come down every 10 minutes at night to make sure that there's no one even hunched over.
So.
I'm in the car.
Are you
outside now, or do you have a place to sleep indoors?
Well, I have places to sleep on and off, but mostly if I'm not in a good space and I end up walking around all night, which is nice because the ocean's pretty, but sometimes I like to stop.
Well, at least you're a law-abiding citizen. I mean, we know that it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night and to cover up with a blanket. Now, I want to make sure that this is not a blanket. No, this is a blanket-like quality to it.
Actually, my blanket jacket is at home, and it's made out of a blanket. And
I see, but you only wear that between the hours of 8:30 in the morning and 11 at night, so as not to violate the municipal code, right?
Well, exactly. I just can't believe the foresight that these people have. I mean, they're already planning on having walking mall before it's even constructed.
Well, it's all for their, for the health of the homeless, in order to keep them, fit. And those who, if those some fall by the wayside, isn't that the struggle for life?
Well, it's evolutionary. It's Darwinism, only the strong can survive.
Yeah,
and especially if you're born into a strong...
I heard a white separatist, a man of white friends, that was a national socialist, a man who was convicted of assaulting a homeless person. Individual described in the media as a Nazi, giving exactly the same perspective, which apparently is the city council perspective on the homeless in terms of the legal situation.
Well, the homeless can't really, they can't really interact with the society very much because they don't really have a place to sleep and really can't interact in a social way because you're so far outside of the society and there's no inlets inward. I mean, in Europe, it is very social. It's almost a rite of passage to go to Europe, be homeless. But if you have a lot of money, it's okay to be broke, poor, wasted out of your mind, walking around like a drunken idiot. That's okay in Europe because they have money. They come from good families. You have to come from someplace to be nothing. But if you're nothing, then you're nothing. And that's somebody else's terms, not my own.
Wow, those Europeans.
More of that interview with Chris Larson in a bit. Quickly want to remind you, those of you who have cable television, I'm a bit late with this announcement, but for every Tuesday and Thursday, both this last Tuesday past, currently today on Thursday and next week, on channel 70, I believe it's 71, though now 72 and 73 have come in, I'm a little confused, who knows what it is. And on channel 71, there is a Club Cruise show, which has your favorite talk show host, that's me, of course, Bathrobe's Pierre Robert, interviewing Robert Stephan. Robert Stephan is the umbrella man. That's the guy running for president downtown on Pacific Avenue. The guy who Bunny Shoes found so horrible and so threatening, they went to Judge Stevens and got a court order to have this man barred from the public bench in front of Bunny Shoes. Of course, and to salute Bunny, as every time I walk by, I, of course, shout out, boycott Bunny Shoes as an attempt to show my solidarity with... Well, obviously, I think that public spaces belong to all of us, not just to customers of Bunny Shoes and those who please the Bunny Shoes Shoe Emporium. Anyway, Robert Stephan is on the air right now on a very interesting interview I had with him. It goes into his history at great length, and you can check it out on Channel 71. It's from 7 to 7:30. If you miss it tonight, it's on next Tuesday and next Thursday, again, 7 o'clock. on Channel 71. It's kind of the Christmas show. You get to see Christmas Santa Cruz style, how they treat poor people in Santa Cruz. Poor people who are visible. If you're not visible, then, you know, you're in like Flynn. You know, the less visible you are, the happier the authorities, whether they be police, merchants, city council members, sheriffs, who knows, whoever they are, the Seaside Company goon squads, they're happy with you. But if you're visible, watch out. Something to read rather quickly. Homeless man fatally beaten December 22nd, Inglewood, California. Authorities are trying to determine why a group of men beat a homeless man and left him to die in a pizza restaurant parking lot. James Brown, 32, was found early Tuesday morning by firefighters who pronounced him dead at the scene. No suspects were in custody. Witnesses told police that six men in a Ford Bronco got out and began beating Brown in a Pizza Hut parking lot when another Bronco with several men pulled up, the police department said in a statement. Men from the second Bronco also began beating Brown, and then all suspects fled. A motive for the beating was not known. Sacramento Bee story of December 22nd. Booming economy creates army of working homeless in the Akron Beacon Journal. That's in Ohio. With low-paying jobs, they live on the streets if shelters refuse them, by Mary Otto. The nightclub doorman stands in a long line waiting for a bed at the Central Union Mission, his arthritis aching in the cold December mist. Behind him is a young man with a cherub's face wearing a spotless white technician's uniform. In line, too, is Michael Taylor, 36, an ex-con, a father, a recovering addict, a devotee of Russian literature, and a day laborer. None of the three fits the stereotype of the homeless person. All three work at least part-time. They just can't afford a place to live. They are the working homeless. I'm totally humiliated, says Taylor. 44% of homeless people nationwide have some sort of a job, according to the latest stats from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. In its rush to create more billionaires, America's miracle economy of the 90s has evidently left a lot of people behind. Stuck in the lowest of low-paying jobs, they are priced out of shrinking markets for affordable housing. They work, they try to save, but they can never accumulate the hundreds of dollars they need for the first month's rent and the security deposit on even a modest apartment. Despite a lack of hard stats, those who work with the homeless around the country say they are seeing more of the working homeless as the economic boom rolls on. Los Angeles housing activist Jeff Farber has encountered homeless telemarketers, nursing assistants, home care and child care providers, data entry clerks, and computer repair technicians. In Los Angeles, it's $1,000 a month for a two-bedroom. A low-wage family of four would have to work 100 hours a week just to pay the rent, says Farber, who is assistant director of the L.A. Family Housing Corporation. 67% of the adults who requested emergency food aid in 26 major American cities this year, so that's 67%, folks, were employed, according to a report released by the U.S. Conference of Mayors a week and a half ago. That's almost double the 37% found last year in the 30 cities surveyed by the Mayors Conference. No one at the organization can explain the increase, so employment is rising, even though homelessness remains out there. There is no margin for error, no more room for accidents or misfortune in the life of a working homeless person. Michael Taylor knows. He says he was shut out of the shelter last night because he worked too late to get in line for a bed at 4:30 p.m. So he slept in a park in the rain. At 4:30 this morning, soaked to the bone, he stood in the day labor line hoping to get picked. Today, Taylor was lucky. He was selected to load trash trucks and earned $33. Tonight, he was lucky again. He got one of 110 beds at the shelter. We always had working poor people, says Peter A. Clavel, the mayor of Burlington, Vermont. In the past, people working full-time had the ability to secure housing and put food on the table. Distressed by the growing number of working families seeking emergency food and shelter, Clavel says traditional relief programs should be redesigned. We need to revisit the fabric of that safety net, he says, to weave a different kind of safety net designed to save people, to catch people who are working. Instead of weaving a new safety net, many cities are wielding a new broom. About 24 major cities are sweeping the homeless off their streets, even though many already have jobs. The working homeless often try to keep their homelessness a secret. Not all of them live on the streets. Some stay with relatives. Others live in cars. Some struggle with physical and mental health problems, inferior education, or troubled pasts. They worry about their children, about getting to work on time. Some can't get food stamps because they have no addresses. They worry about getting to a shelter before the evening deadline consigns them to the streets for another night. When morning comes,
They search for a place to hide the bags that contain everything they own. Then they try to work another day. Work becomes a kind of catch-22 for the working homeless. If they meet job schedules, they often miss appointments with social workers or schooling that might advance them. Michael Taylor admits that his prison record doesn't help. Crack cocaine was his downfall. He went to prison when he was 26 for robbing a convenience store. He served 10 years. Taylor got straight in prison. He read a lot of great books there, Crime and Punishment, Anna Karenina, and dreamed big dreams about the future. Given a chance to start over, Taylor was forced to confront the original blank slate of his life. Tracked down his birth certificate. He had never seen it before. He is a father himself, but a stranger to his own three daughters. He says he is too ashamed even to try to contact them. Everything is particularly hard at Christmas. You see families walking down the street with their Christmas shopping. You are in a shelter waiting for someone to feed you. You are unable to meet your most basic needs. I'd love to be in my home opening presents, giving presents more than anything else in the world. You'd like to be able to give someone something. Akron Beacon Journal from December 21st. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the word obscene's come up a couple of times. Yesterday I had the distinctive pleasure of going up to Oakland to deal with the federal government. And an attitude that really came to the fore in my dealings with them is that they wanted, and they wanted me to give them information, and they wanted me to do this, and they wanted all sorts of things from me, as opposed to them being accountable for certain things that they had done during my delicious tour of duty in the military. Unfortunately, I was in there for 3.5 years. I have to admit that, yes, I was in the military, and I admitted to my chagrin.
Yeah, but you did work for the government, so they owe you at least certain basic rights as a vet, right?
Yeah, basic rights as a vet, and also, well, I'm actually going for a service-connected disability claim related to events that occurred during my time in the military. And it was just, it appalls me how much the powers that be are insatiable. They want more, and they want more and more and more. If a person is willing to go out and to work and to be responsible and to respect other citizens, they have a right to their basic necessities, that is housing and food and clothing, to be met. It is obscene, it is shocking, it's a really sad statement on our society that decent people are doing without the basics, while the rich just can't seem to get rich enough.
Hear, hear. No question about that.
What it started, the picture that it started, I also had heard that Municipal Court and Superior Court have been merged. So there was kind of like a new shakedown going on there as far as... Yeah, the impression that I was getting from this is that these judges are and see themselves as little gods who create the law in their own division, in their own courtroom, and that they have the power, like I say, to determine the amount of money that you are allotted per day if you're serving out a fine. And the more I looked into this, the more I realized that these two guys, Danner and Attic, seem to be real rivals. They're like little minor principalities, if you like, who are in strong opposition to each other. And I almost got the impression that today Danner looked and said, well, okay, this guy Attic was really going to fuck this guy, therefore he's my asshole enemy, so therefore I'm going to release him, something like that.
Yeah, no, I think Danner is wary of saving Dan's stuff because he knows that a lot of us are activists around it, but I don't think he's that much more compassionate, but I think...
Well, like I say,
he has a better record on sleeping down, as far as I know.
I mean, my feeling was just that it might have been based on his hatred for that.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're much more enlightened. You're not allowed to even stagger around.
It's amazing to me that we have so much space and they have so little space, and still they tolerate it. They actually have to interact with homeless people on a daily basis, in fact, on an hourly basis, because there's no place to hide. Where are these people going to go? I mean, here we could always drive out to, the any number of state parks that are provided by our national system and state system.
Well, if there's spaces open, if the money is available, if you have fit within the structure, because, for example, I think they have, at least a couple years ago, used to be you couldn't sleep in a state park for more than 2 weeks.
I'm not talking about sleeping. I'm talking about the people with money can actually escape the problem, their problem that they have with homeless people. The homeless people can't do anything but walk around. I mean, you're not going to walk to a state park.
Right.
So the fact is these people with no space are very tolerant, and we have a whole glorious half of a continent that we're wasting for nuclear waste and other trivial things.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you're going to be writing about the sleeping ban and the situation for those houseless individuals who seem to be clustering around this table in the days ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope to. Thank you. Thank you.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, still 96.3 FM. We do have open phone lines at 427-3772. You can join us for the last 45 minutes of our show. We welcome your input. If you're a critic, hey, come on with your criticisms. We want to hear it. You're a part of the community as well. We want a dialogue here. And hopefully, out of that dialogue, we can eventually get some real action going. One of the things that's coming up and I've been focusing on is Robert Steffen, again, the fellow with the umbrella downtown, presidential candidate, barred from a public bench in front of Bunny Shoes by a court order because, according to the document, according to the report by Margaret Payne, the owner of Bunny Shoes, I guess Bunny, you might say that, I think that's what she calls herself, she didn't like the way he was looking at the employees, even though other people testify that he doesn't look at the employees. The bench doesn't face the window. The store faces down the street. And in fact, it was the employees' boyfriends who had been running over and abusing him verbally, threatening him, kicking his cart, knocking his cart over. This is all admitted by Margaret Payne in the document she presents. But the judge, Samuel Stevens, apparently is so wed to the merchant economy downtown, or I don't know. I mean, he believes what they tell him, I guess. And there was a preliminary hearing on this, which was continued because Robert Steffen tried to get a lawyer, and no lawyer has come forward. If anyone is out there has any legal training or has any contacts with lawyers, please give a call to 423 Huff or walk up to Robert Steffen. He's on the street. He's moved from his bench to another bench that's down the way in front of the new Crapper House. It used to be known as the Cooper House. I'd like to give it its more appropriate name. It's a real obscenity. They tore down that thing lickety-split in spite of the fact that there was a real question as to whether it was critically damaged and couldn't be saved, that beautiful brick Cooper House. And we have this new monstrosity in its place. Anyway, he's in front of that building. And he goes to court, back to court on December 27th, 9 a.m., I think, is the call for the master calendar, and then he will be assigned to a judge. Got some interviews on that subject that I wanted to play. You've already heard Margaret Payne. You heard her in a prior show. I'm going to play a little bit of the discussion of some of Robert Steffen's advocates. I believe we're going to be listening to Marilyn Weaver of the Homeless Issues Task Force, an advocate of Robert's and also formerly an employee at the Homeless Services Center. Sometimes I turn into these tapes in the wrong spots. Bear with me. I think we're going to go. You want to say something, by the way?
Yeah, I've passed by him a number of times, and he's never glared at me, not even once. He seems like a friendly guy.
No, he is. Very soft-spoken, very friendly, very grubby-looking, but there was complaints about his hygiene when he was in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter program. He had his vehicle stolen from him by county authorities. He had been jailed. He had spent 3 weeks in a hunger strike in jail, and then he'd gone to the Homeless Service Center and looked for a place to sleep. And they put him in the program. Well, actually, he was lucky to get in there because they only have room for 30 people in the summer out of, again, a population of homeless people, 500 to 1,500 large, which is lots of people and not much sleeping space, and $54 ticket threat for the rest of them. Anyway, he got in that program, but he said the staff became hostile to him. And first they claimed he didn't have the right hygiene. And so he went to nurses and doctors at Dominican, and they said, no, there's no problem with his hygiene. I've never smelled anything unusual out of the ordinary, and I've talked to him more than a dozen times now.
You know, he's not a stinky guy. He looks very grubby. I mean, he has dirty glasses. My goodness, he wears a safari hat with a piece of plastic over part of it that looks like a, you know, kind of, it was made in Japan. Not Japan. This said like 40 years ago. Looks like it was made in I don't know, Capitola, whatever. But he, you know, he smells fine. And they gave him a clean bill of health. Then they started claiming he wouldn't do the kind of work they wanted. They from his perspective, they created pretexts to throw him out of the program. So when he was thrown out of the program, he then said, I believe, person, as you are saying, Casey, should have the right to have a place to sleep. So I'm not going to sleep outside because that will make me illegal under the sleeping ban in public spaces. I'm going to go sleep on the porch of the Homeless Services Center, which has an obligation to provide some kind of shelter for homeless people. And there was, and the response of the Homeless Service Center staff and indeed of its director, Ken Cole, was, you have to leave the property or be arrested. He refused to leave the property. He was arrested. They held him in jail 30 days, came back, refused to leave again. They arrested him again, held him 30 days. It happened a third time, 30 days. This time they took him to trial, and now he's on probation for, quote, trespass on the Homeless Services Center property. The homeless man has been found guilty of trespassing on a Homeless Services Center porch for trying to sleep as a homeless person in town, which has an anti-homeless sleeping ban.
Wow.
And so now what's happening is he moved his protest out to the front of Bunny Shoes, I should say, to a bench near Bunny Shoes. Bunny Shoes happened to be there. He didn't choose it because of Bunny Shoes. He felt the contrast between himself as a poor person and an upscale shoe store. Maybe it was sort of the Imelda Marcos demonstration. I don't know what we call it. Imelda Marcos, for those who don't remember, is the one of the reigning tyrant in Indonesia, not Indonesia, in Philippines.
They had the punch pants for footwear.
And she had lots of fancy shoes herself, and she was evicted by the Filipino people in the mid-80s, but, you know, made a big stink about it, and you keep hearing about her in the papers every so often. Anyway, he sat on that bench, and then she got a restraining order against him because she said he stared at his personnel, and he also created a violence threat because the boyfriends of her staff were threatening him with violence. I thought that was... It's hard for me to keep a straight face on that.
Classic blame the victim.
It was quite something. Yeah. And Stevens, you know, that's our Judge Stevens. He okays that. We get to see on the 27th if he's going to okay that one again. And I guess you can go to the hearing in the morning and then go to the Homeless Issues Task Force in the afternoon. Anyway, let's hear a little bit of some of the controversy. I recorded a lot of Marilyn, of Margaret Payne, the bunny, who had the critical, drew up the papers against Robert Stephan. Now we get to hear some of the supporters, I believe. I hope I'm on the right tape.
Okay, well, it's about 4:35 in front of Bunny Shoes with the Maryland Bell. So you guys had a complaint about Officer Steele, and you recently received a response.
And actually, this is a very good interview, but it's not the right interview. So we're going to move ahead to another interview in which we hear Robert talking about his case. And we're going to come back to that Seeley interview. That's an important one. It concerns Officer Seeley at the Homeless Services Center and why these two former employees, Marilyn Weaver and Doug McGrath, were kicked out, and they were then abusively treated by the police, and the whole thing was covered up in my mind or ignored by the Citizens Police Review Board, about which more later. In the meantime, let's continue with Robert Stephan.
So it is December 14th, 1999, for the last 15 days of the month, and it's about 25 to 6 on this Tuesday evening. City Council is meeting, and we're heading for the mall, or I should say Pacific Avenue. Well, we're on the street near the soon-to-be-filled-up Cooper House, or Crapper House, as some have called it, mocking the huge new structure, which kind of defames the old one. It used to be the Cooper House. And we're talking to Robert Stephan, man under the umbrella. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
And, Robert, you're still here, running for president. Your yellow raincoat hooked over your cart, and it has been kind of cold these mornings. Have you been running your regular schedule, or getting here about what time?
Still about, I'm set up about 8 o'clock.
And you leave about 8:30.
Really?
Yes, at night. And any problems, any hassles, any good things to report?
any good things to report? I don't know. Well, yeah, some people have been, I mean, some people have been nice, but other people haven't been.
But in general, giving away large gifts, perhaps?
I got a couple of sweaters.
Hey, Mama, what about some $10, $15 donations?
It has accumulated to that over time. Like today, I got $2.
So do you make enough to eat at this spot?
Yes, I am.
Well, that's a step forward. And here come the local police officers. How have they been treating you?
They've been okay, except yesterday I had some crumbs, and I was sprinkling them on the ground because birds often come by and eat.
And eating birds without a permit?
Well, I didn't have a permit, and the birds weren't there at the moment.
Eating non-existent birds without a permit.
Yes, that's what I was doing.
Littering!
That's what it happened. You see, the officer drove by in a car, and he wagged his finger at me. Actually, he was the passenger police man, and he said, "You're littering." And I said, I'm just putting crumbs on the ground. And they drove off.
So they didn't return to give you the ticket you so richly deserved.
Well, there were very few crumbs, and they stood at the, then they decided...
I think you're wrong about that. There were at least two crumbs, or one of them, and that was sitting in the seat of the passenger side of the police car.
Yes, yes. And actually, the two officers showed back up and stood at that kitty corner from me for about a half hour watching me.
And had you removed all the crumbs?
There were very few crumbs, and no, I didn't, but the birds later came and did remove them.
So the birds were, in essence, complicitors in this act of littering, covering up your behavior.
Yes, one could say that. The birds are my accomplices.
This whole thing is, I would have to say, for the birds.
I would agree. Is that a law now? I'm not allowed to put crumbs on the ground?
I don't think so, no. I think the police officers are, shall we say, having a good one at your expense.
That is not unusual.
Unless you're dumping like 100 pounds of popcorn on the ground, I would say it seemed to me not illegal to feed the birds.
Oh, thank you. Good to know.
Yeah. May I be my guest? Now, of course, I could be wrong. Things change quickly here in Santa Cruz, or in Sanity Cruz, as some have called it.
Yes, well, if I'm incarcerated, I will certainly invite you along.
Well, I know that you are on probation for the crime of trespass, or should we say, sleeping on the porch of the homeless service center and then refusing to move when told to do so by an employee of the homeless services center. But I've heard today at city council meeting, because at that council meeting, your claim for $25 was presented. What was that claim for?
Well, I had, when I was arrested at one point for my protest action of trespassing, I had a bag of stuff. In it were toothbrush, toothpaste, dental floss, personal papers of various sorts, and another sundry items, which added a problem to more than $25. However, I also had two closed packages of rice. And apparently the officer looked in the bag, saw the rice, saw that it was a perishable item, assumed, I guess, that the whole bag was perishable and threw the whole thing away.
And who was the officer who did this?
I don't recall his name. I don't recall his name.
You remember, was this your first, second, or third trespass arrest?
I'm trying to remember. I believe it was the third time.
For which you're actually ultimately convicted.
Yes. And I believe I put his name down on the... form that, you know, requested my return $25.
So, it looks like the council voted 6-1 against your claim, but they did say, Tim Fitzmaurice, councilmember, said he had spoken to you, and he said that he was concerned to know about this food and what was being thrown away. But he said he also, because I'd given a description of your history and how you've been protesting the lack of shelter and the discriminatory treatment on Pacific Avenue. How would you describe your Bunny's Bench occupation? Was this just sort of a wild affection for the Bunny's Bench? Why did you stay at that bench for so long?
Well, I stayed at that bench for the reasons that it was by itself, and I like my privacy, even though I'm doing a public action. I like not to have people sitting across at bench at a right next to me and just gawking at me or engaging in other conversation, often with side slashing remarks at me. So the bench was alone,
And I like the contrast between myself, homeless, and women often frivolously spending money on expensive shoes without thinking of the social problems that exist around them. So it was an aesthetic, artistic, if you will, expression. That's how it begun, and then grew into my desire for presidency and the campaign. So it was all those things.
Now, who asked you to leave the Bunny's Bench?
First, it was an officer. I recall correctly, it was the Australian officer,
Officer Brandt,
who came by several times asking me to move on. Other officers did as well. But he was probably the worst in that he actually threatened me with arrest for violating my probation if saying that they would press charges of harassment, and he would have backed them up and sort of pressing file charges of harassment against me, which would be a violation of my probation if I didn't move, and that I would then end up in jail. And that's what he threatened me with.
What about the employees of Bunny Shoes or Margaret Payne, Bunny, or the owner of the hat company? Did they urge you to leave?
The hat company urged me to leave, and saying I wouldn't, they offered me a hat to replace mine. They tried to dress me up as a homeless
person. Dressing you up?
Yes, they wanted me to be a pretty homeless person.
Right.
And never mind the fact that I'm without money and without a place to live, they want me to look nice. I'd rather have a place to live, but they seem to ignore that.
Are you trying to intimidate the town into giving you a place to live?
I'm not trying to intimidate anybody. If people's hearts are such that they do not care about other people suffering, then they are welcome to live those lives. And I really do not want any part of those people. Really, that is the truth. I do not want to intimidate anybody. People should give only if they want to. And if you don't want to, if it's not from your heart, I don't want your gift. Understand that. It would just hurt me more than anything.
That's pretty damn Christian to me, man. I thought you were an atheist.
Oh, no, I am an atheist, but I do believe in the goodness of people's hearts.
A true atheist. Hard to find these days.
I have no need for a deity to push this on me. I just believe it's part of our being.
Now, have you ever been convicted of anything other than trespass? If people have spoken of your criminal record or fear of your criminal record. Do you have a criminal record?
I did a protest action down in Southern California. I sat on the sidewalk in Beverly Hills, where it's illegal to sit on the sidewalk, so I feel it's unconstitutional.
What year was this?
What's that?
When was this?
That was several years ago.
Uh-huh.
The year O.J. Simpson was being all in the news.
Right.
And of course, last March, I was arrested when I was sitting on the side of the road, and the police arrested me for parking.
And where was this? Where was this?
That was up on a road up from Corralitos, near a slide about a mile from the nearest habitation.
So these are pretty serious charges, protesting in Beverly Hills and parking by the side of the road in a camper. How do you plead?
Guilty to trying to raise social consciousness.
Don't rub that on your nose.
Well, now, there's someone said, what do you mean by this preposterous display of signs and ragged paraphernalia? I mean, certainly you can't expect to win the presidency.
I certainly can expect to win the presidency if people vote with their consciences as opposed to big media and ignoring their consciences. And my entire platform is about choice. People must have the choice to do things. I'm morally against many of the things on my platform, such as I'm morally against the use of drugs. But people should have the choice. Without choice, we have nothing. And same with prostitution.
Now, you've heard something about violence on the streets against homeless people and poor people, and you've been out here for 6 weeks. What more? Actually, 8, 9 weeks now, I'm not sure.
Since October 5th.
Since October 5th. Have you witnessed any instances of violence or talked to anyone about this, seen much of that?
Yes, I have.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, we shouldn't forget the two boyfriends from Bunny's Shoes who, actually it was two boyfriends verbally threatened to beat me up. And one of the two kicked over my cart on one occasion, and the next day kicked it again just so it rolled. Mm-hmm. So it kicked my, so attacked my stuff. Mm-hmm. I've had signs ripped from
ripped and destroyed by another person
outside Zanotto's,
the grocery store. Oh, that had occurred as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had a sign ripped away and stolen outside of Zanotto's. Zanotto's, I think, is how it should be pronounced.
Oh, really? Well, they call it Zanotto's.
I prefer Zanotto's.
No toes.
Italian label, like people with toes.
I see. No toes, Zanotto's.
Yes. Well, that's anyway. Yeah, that's why Zanotto's. They took away my. Someone stole my sign, and Zanotto's won't let me put my card on the inside where it would be safe. So I can't go. So I go shopping there, but I leave my card elsewhere. And,
but you have to carry your signs with you. That would get them.
Yes, except they would probably exclude me from the store, I would imagine. Yes, seems to be the rule.
Interesting.
And anyway, back.
Yeah, Robert's signs, of course, say there is no God, and then there's a lengthy presidential platform which includes, I would say, kind of a McGovernite-type platform from 1972, a little bit more radical, perhaps, moderate democratic socialist kind of platform. You're listening to Robert Steffen, the umbrella man, as I call him, on the bench, the guy who sits downtown on Pacific Avenue. He's usually there during the daylight hours. You can go up and talk to him about his presidential platform, about the plight of homeless people in Santa Cruz, about his history. And hey, give him a sandwich. He can use it.
Fine tearing. Although I do agree with you that Zanotto's, I don't understand why they're so mean about people having the First Amendment.
Well, it depends on what you say on your signs. Although they may be sort of so paranoid that they feel any kind of political expression at all is inappropriate in their store. Some businesses are that way, usually conservative businesses. But actually, what I was talking to you about, and you've given a good, pretty good capsule history of actions against you, but has there been anything regarding other people you've seen in terms of, I'm talking about really more violence involving real physical brutality between individuals.
Real physical brutality.
Has anybody beaten up or heard anything about that?
I, for some reason, by just sitting here by myself, I tend not to get involved with that. Though I did see some the other day. It was on Sunday. A gentleman or an individual was getting a massage, and someone I'm not, I don't know if he was homeless or not, came by and apparently touched his hair or pulled his hair. I don't know. That was the claim of the individual who got up from the massage table while this other gentleman was 40 feet away, about right over there. The guy got up from the massage thing, ran across, grabbed this other individual, and smashed him to the sidewalk.
It was very... How were these two individuals dressed? Similarly, or...
Were
they both middle-class people? Was one of them homeless-looking?
Well, the guy getting the massage was middle-class, in a short, had on a T-shirt, and well-groomed, and... Stock.
The assailant, in other words.
What's that?
The assailant.
The assailant, yes. Yeah, the assailant was well groomed. The victim was homeless looking.
Did they seem to know each other, or was it just
Not at all. And the assailant claimed that the guy walking by pulled his hair out. I don't know but if he did or not, but certainly throwing an individual to the sidewalk and pinning him hard, that seems out of...
Disproportionate?
Yes, disproportionate.
Now, was a police call? Was there a report made?
No, they were able to separate themselves and
move along.
Nothing else happened.
Any other either stuff you've witnessed or have you heard of beatings of homeless people?
No, I heard of a 12-year-old young girl who was raped.
How long ago?
That was about last Friday, I believe.
And do you regard this as apocryphal or likely to have happened?
I believe it did happen because an older girl came by looking for a 12-year-old girl on Friday, and then on Saturday someone reported, a different individual reported that a 12-year-old girl had been raped.
And you think it was the same girl?
And I do, because the first younger lady was looking for this young girl because she was afraid that she was drunk and hanging out with some drunks and was afraid for her. And then the following evening, I heard from a different individual that he had seen this young girl being raped and, well, the end of it, I guess, because he and his and a friend of his chased the other guy, off and, I guess, brought her to the authorities or something.
Now, this is the Christmas season. We have the Christmas lights on each of these barren little trees up and down the avenue that have, of course, replaced the beautiful foliage and shrubbery that used to be up and down the street. Do you see a spirit of Christmas on the streets?
In some respects, yes. I mean, in some individuals, yes. In some, in others, no. It varies individual to individual.
You're going back to court on December 27th when the issue of whether you can return to the bunch in front of bench in front of Bunny's Shoes, a real tongue twister, is going to be allowed. Boy, I see a ticket being written across the street here. I'm going to pause briefly and check it out. I'll be right back.
The ticket written across the street, you'll learn shortly, was for jaywalking, and it had to do with three individuals who I observed, actually not far from Robert Steffen, where he was sitting on the bench. Police officers walked up to them and didn't like them for some reason. They kind of stared at them for a while. Then the police officers walked across the street and continued to stare at this group of three. There were two police officers. One of them crossed the street, at which point he was given a jaywalking ticket. Now, this is on Pacific Avenue, near in a place where Pacific Avenue, well, it's all one way pretty much in that area, but there was very little traffic. It seemed clearly discriminatory, and that's another thing we're going to talk about, how on Pacific Avenue around Christmas there seems to be a real crackdown. I have tapes that I'm hoping to play on the Sunday show, and I invite you to join in from 11 to 1:30 when this show on civil rights returns on Sunday, 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. Tapes which show three instances of harassment within a period of 15 or 20 minutes. One guy dropped an orange peel inside a planter, and that took up the efforts of four police officers and one double-parked squad car for about 15 minutes. Another individual was sitting in the area of Cathcart Pacific's formerly the Cat and Canary, and that person got a told to move on even though the building's been abandoned. Hang on, we got an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm sorry, we just can't tolerate any orange peels or crumbs on the ground or in planters downtown.
Well, I see this is a law-abiding citizen here.
We need to pass an ordinance about this right away.
There already is, actually, a number of ordinances. Of course, the individual who was ticketed at Cathcart Pacific or sitting was ticketed under our famous Rotkin Kennedy, actually now it's Byers, sitting ban. She voted for the modified sitting ban in the summer of 1994 after it was originally been thrown out by the police, and then a second ban was passed by the council. And the final incident, which I was going to tell you, and I'll take this opportunity to talk on your time on the phone, was...
My time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Driving while brown, a Hispanic man in a rather upscale vehicle was stopped by these same two police officers.
Who were they?
One of them was Evelith, and the other one, I don't recall his...
Brandt?
No, it wasn't Brandt. We're walking up and down the street, and they gave out the orange peel ticket, the sitting in next to an abandoned building ticket, or warning and harassment, move away. And then finally they gave this guy a ticket for, he had too loud Latino music. They didn't like, first of all, they mentioned that the people in this block didn't appreciate that kind of music.
Oh, my God.
And they searched his car. They found what they described as a weapon, a stick he used to prop open his car or some such thing.
Yeah.
And I interviewed the guy, and we're going to hopefully have that interview on Sunday. But anything you want to say, Bob? I'm going to try to finish up the Robert Steffen.
Okay. Real quick, the Gap, there's been these anti-carolers out in front of the Gap.
Oh, excellent.
Recently, and I witnessed was it Officer Brandt there? He had on his very nice hat that night, the other night, and the original call was they were blocking the entranceway, which they weren't, and so they actually basically broke up the protest. It was more of a carol, anti-carol. There's all these carols against the Gap and what they're doing to the Redwoods and whatnot, and anti-carolers and that kind of thing.
Well, I would encourage people not to let their protest be broken up by the likes of Officer Brandt. I mean, if you're blocking the sidewalk, just stop blocking it and keep caroling, you know?
Yeah. Well, it seems like when the police show up and just stand there that it tends to intimidate people, but people need to not be intimidated by that. Anyway, I let you get back to Robert Steffen. It's very interesting. Good show.
Thank you.
Bye.
And that, of course, was Copwatch Bob. And, again, I'm going to play a little of this jaywalking ticket if we have time. I don't think we will. Instead, we're going to go directly to the city council meeting where about an hour before this last interview you just heard with Robert Steffen, his claim for $25 for the bag of rice was brought up and discussed. Of course, the person who brought it up was you-know-who.
consent agenda item number 2, clean the water status.
Thank you, Mayor Fitter. Robert Stephens' complaint is a small one. He's only seeking a $25 claim from the city, as I understand it. Robert Stephens is the man with the umbrella, the There Is No God sign, and the presidential platform posted to his cart, who sits on the bench at Pacific Avenue near what was the Cooper House. This non-violent man, after complaints from upscale shoe merchant Margaret Payne, was court-ordered away from the bench in front of Benny's shoe store next to the hat company because Ms. Payne found him unpredictable. In giving out reports, he was staring at her staff. Robert Stephan was on this bench after spending 3 months in jail for 3 arrests. These were arrests for refusing to leave the porch of the Homeless Services Center where he was trying to sleep after the Homeless Services Center had turned him away from its already full ISSP program, which gives out 30 spaces on the floor of the churches for the city's 500 to 1,500 homeless people. Then, as some suggest, when he was so out of step with the commercial Christmas spirit downtown, they had to have him moved by court order. Others suggest the police department took a helping hand here through the intercession of Sergeant Sanders, who suggested paying with the injunction.
I have to interrupt you for a second. The issue is
the claim against the city.
$25.
Yes, the $25.
Which means only to block this, or allegedly block this.
Right, well, this is why I think the city should grant this claim, because of this history. I think it's important for the city to know why he's there. It's unusual for an individual to be in a public space in that fashion, and I think that most of the city, in fact, that goes downtown sees him there. So I'm putting out the background to it. And there won't be much more about another men like mine about that. This was after Officer Brandt failed to drive Robert Stephan away with threats. I think the city owes Robert Stephan much more than $25 for denial of shelter for the last 6 months. In addition to this, Stephan faces harassment, arrest, and fines from the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, which I'm afraid Mayor Sugar so far has refused to put on the agenda in spite of requests from the Homeless Issues Task Force, which unanimously voted for that resolution last Monday, a week ago. Please grant this claim, and thank you for your time.
All right, item 6.
Yes.
This claim has to do with the claim of certain materials.
Councilmember Rodkin, trash on the claim. Dissenting vote was that of Christopher Crone, who did not speak, interestingly enough, on the issue. Fitzmaurice, you may note, was the last speaker before Mayor Sugar took the vote, said simply that he thought everything was okie dokie. You know, as he said, options have been explained, that the store owner is taking her legal option, he's taking his legal option. Apparently, Councilmember Fitzmaurice, who I last saw in tears out at the Homeless Services Center in this memorial service for the homeless, and who has been getting a lot of good press among homeless people for bringing food up to the armory, meaning snacks late at night, and I mean, before people go to bed, which is commendable. I got no problem with private charity, and it's commendable when a council member takes a concerted interest in this and does so and has to be acknowledged, and I acknowledge it. But the question, of course, as to Fitzmaurice's course of behavior generally on homeless issues, when we have heard not a peep out of him all year in terms of expanding shelter space or decriminalizing homeless people, people. He did make a statement at the private, some would say, secret meeting that Keith Sugar had 2 days before that city council meeting that you just heard, which was the last Tuesday city council meeting of the year, a week ago. He stated that he had always favored moving toward decriminalization of poor people and letting them sleep, and he claimed he'd favored this a year ago, but for some reason he just didn't vote for it when the key issues came up at city council in December and then again in March when Catherine Byers crushed the changes in the sleeping ban that might have made a difference. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Lindvick in Huntington, Senators. What do you mean not a peep out of Fitzmaurice all year? Fitzmaurice is the peep that made the 3-day limit on allowing residents and citizens to choose letting someone park in their driveway or, you know, attach
to their house. So you're being critical of Fitzmaurice for this really preposterous idea that you can sleep in somebody's driveway for 3 nights out of a month?
For preposterously bringing in the idea that there had to be a finite number of days to start with, and then picking 3, and then admitting in public, I was watching this, that the reason he picked it is because, well, you know, we have ordinance about if abandoned cars are left for more than 3 days after being noticed, well, there must be some reason for that, so let's let people whose homes are their vehicles have to move it.
Well, let's carry that metaphor a little further.
A cancerous nail in the coffin of the camping ban, in my view.
Tim has got a great handle on this. I think we need, you have a tow yard where they tow abandoned vehicles. How about a dump where they tow abandoned homeless people? We could maybe have a sort of a special homeless discarding ground.
Well, we could set up an SPCA for people or something, you know. After 2 weeks, if nobody
How about just an old yard where you sort of dump homeless people that are there for more than 3 days?
I've had my share of old bone yards, I'll tell you.
I catch your point, Lyndon. I think it's quite pertinent, and I know that I have trashed Fitzmaurice because he follows Byers around like, you know, with his little wagon, as I like to describe it.
Well, he got ahead of her this once, and he didn't do any homework.
Right.
It's really sad capable of it.
I got to tell you, when I saw him crying his eyes out at the Homeless Services Center, and I think he was sincere, it was real hard for me not to walk up to him and say, Tim, now that you've seen that the death list of homeless people, and one of whom apparently was one of his relatives, John Fitzmaurice, whoever that was, whether it's his father or his brother, I don't know.
He probably didn't even know he was homeless until he heard he was dead.
You know, he has to, for him to continue to take the stance that there's no winter crisis that needs to be dealt with at city council, for which the issue should be raised at city council, is preposterous. It shows he's either blind or self-deluded.
I think he's coming along nicely, but he didn't do anything last year when he just really stomped right over the camping ban as if it weren't bad enough already.
No, you mean he stomped right over the attempt to repeal the sleeping sections of the camping ban.
No, it was already a done deal that it was going to pass. They weren't going to really repeal it. They weren't going to radically change it. They were going to tinker with it. You know, they dragged that Kennedy.
What you're saying is he made it worse, not better.
In this one stroke, he made it reprehensible when they were attempting to try to liberalize it.
I think Casey wants to say something, but we got to go. Uncle Dennis is coming in, and it's his time.
I didn't mean to go that long.
I would just like to say that I agree totally with what Shakespeare said in Hamlet, that in the fatness of these pursy times, virtue itself a vice must pardon, beg to curb, and woo for leave to do him good. I just encourage everyone that into the next millennium we care more about our neighbor than about money.
Hear. This has been Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We will return 11 o'clock on Sunday morning with more yummy stuff, including busts in your own town for orange peels and jaywalking. We're going to allow Uncle Dennis to zip right into his tape if he's ready, or we can play our own. It's up to you, Dennis.
Play your own tape, Dennis.
We'll play our own for the moment. And I want to thank you for being with us. If you have problems with the police or questions on any of these issues, addresses, let's say you want to get our phone numbers you haven't been able to pick up off the air, give a call to 423-HUFF. Off times, 423-4833.
Well, thanks for having me on, Robert.
And listen, I want a special thanks to that bubblicious bubble woman. We were going to do some on-studio sex, but we have different sexual preferences here, and it's a real
That's
problem.
That's right. Hooray for Vermont.
We're going to try to...
As long as you clean up the studio when you're done, Robert.
Yeah, well, we believe in safe and clean sex. Well, actually, messy sex can be fun. Let's not get into that at this time. Stay with us and stay with Uncle Dennis and come on back soon. Also, Sunday. We'll see you on Sunday.
In Del Rio, the People's Army, number 18 Companeros. Hungry, weak, but unafraid, they're learning revolution straight in the high Sierra Maestra. And in the mountains, winds are blowing, bearing seeds of hope and sowing, crossing Cuban earth that mark the belt of victory.
Robert departs out into the wild, cold world. May you stay warm, Robert.
Thank you, Mickey.
And all your friends.
And the sleeping bear.
Yes.